promised last Sunday. We begin this morning a series of studies in the book of Ecclesiastes. And if you have the same difficulty of finding your way around the Bible as I do, then the way to find Ecclesiastes is to look for the very middle of your Bible and to open that. And that will invariably open up the Psalms. Then comes the book of Proverbs. Then comes the book of Ecclesiastes. If you get to Song of Solomon, you've passed it. Psalms, Proverbs, Ecclesiastes. And we read in chapter 1 and from verse 1. Ecclesiastes 1, verse 1. Hear the word of God. The words of the teacher, son of David, king of Jerusalem. Meaningless, meaningless, says the teacher. Utterly meaningless, everything is meaningless. What does man gain from all his labor at which he toils under the sun? Generations come and generations go, but the earth remains forever. The sun rises and the sun sets, and hurries back to where it rises. The wind blows to the south and turns to the north. Round and round it goes, ever returning on its course. All streams flow into the sea, yet the sea is never full. To the place the streams come from, there they return again. All things are wearisome, more than one can say. The eye never has enough of seeing, nor the ear its fill of hearing. What has been will be again. What has been done will be done again. There is nothing new under the sun. Is there anything of which one can say, look, this is something new? It was here already long ago. It was here before our time. There is no remembrance of men of old, and even those who are yet to come will not be remembered by those who follow. The teacher was king over Israel in Jerusalem. I devoted myself to study and to explore by wisdom all that is done under heaven. What a heavy burden God has laid on men. I have seen all the things that are done under the sun. All of them are meaningless, a chasing after the wind. What is twisted cannot be straightened. What is lacking cannot be counted. I thought to myself, look, I have grown and increased in wisdom more than anyone who has ever ruled over Jerusalem before me. I have experienced much of wisdom and knowledge. Then I applied myself to the understanding of wisdom and also of madness and folly. But I learned that this too is a chasing after the wind. For with much wisdom comes much sorrow. The more knowledge, the more grief. May God add his blessing to this reading from his holy word. Let us now turn with me to the passage we read together earlier in the book of Ecclesiastes. A Russian writer commenting on what he considered to be the emptiness and pointlessness of life described it as a country in which there are no signposts because there is nowhere to go. A country in which there are no signposts because there is nowhere to go. What a tragic conclusion to come to about life. But you see, that will always be the conclusion of men and women who have no real spiritual dimension in their lives. And we begin our study of the book of Ecclesiastes this morning for a very simple reason. The author here confronts us with a very basic question. What is the purpose of life? There is no more basic question than that. And the preacher, or the teacher, and that's what the word Ecclesiastes means, challenges secular thinking of all ages. He aims to show that life, which is not lived in relation to God, is empty and pointless. And he makes us ask, why am I here? And he cautions us against giving the wrong answer to that question. The phrase which the preacher uses to describe secular life, that is, life that is lived without any relation to God, is, verse 3, life under the sun. This is a very important phrase. It occurs 31 times in the book, and it provides us with a key to its understanding. It opens up the book for us. It constantly appears to remind us that the author is dealing primarily with the secular thinker, the man who has left God out of his philosophy of life. And you will notice from the text that the preacher begins by describing the monotonous circularity of life. How many times have you heard someone say, I'm going round in circles and getting nowhere fast? For the secular man, life is not a magic roundabout. It becomes a mere treadmill of existence. He looks out on nature, as the writer does here, and what does he see? Generations coming and generations going, the sun rising and the sun setting, streams constantly flowing into the sea, evaporating, raining down upon the hills again, back to where they started, flowing down into the sea, the monotonous circularity of life. There is a predictable monotony in all that he sees. Now, he says, my life lived under the sun is just like that. Life without any relationship to God is just like that. It has no goal, it has no purpose for existence. It's one monotonous cycle. Now, some secular historians view history as a depressing cycle of events. Perhaps why? That's why their subject is often made so boring. It's one monotonous cycle of events. They tell us history is going nowhere. There is no destiny. There is no great purpose being worked out. Expect no more from history than you would from watching your automatic washing machine, is basically what they're saying. It's just going round and round and round in one monotonous cycle. The man in the street is well aware of the monotonous cycle of his 9-to-5 job, if he has one. He just exists for week after week after week. His life is marked by dissatisfaction and disillusionment. This dates me, I know, but have you heard Simon Garfunkel sing, "I'm going round in circles in the windmill of my mind"? That sums up the picture here. Now, whenever such folk become aware of the monotonous merry-go-round of life, they begin to shout, "Stop the world! I want to get off! Man, you see, wants to break free. He wants to break out." But his escape bid is often an escape from reality. Should we really be surprised when so many in society look forward to their next pub crawl, or their next session of transcendental meditation, or their next fix of crack? They long, you see, to escape into some hallucinatory oblivion. You see, life without spiritual reference to God is a wearisome business. Now, the secularist not only sees life as a monotonous cycle of existence, he finds it constantly boring. Verses 8 to 10. "All things are wearisome, more than one can say. The eye has never done enough of seeing, nor can the ear, its fill of hearing. What has been will be again. What has been done will be done again. There is nothing new under the sun. Is there anything of which one can say, 'Look, here is something new'?" In these verses, we have a picture of a frenzy of activity, as weary man runs from one new thing to another in search of satisfaction. He grows to great lengths. He tries every new craze. Every new diversion is on his agenda. He is looking for anything that might break the boredom of life. And then he begins to think like Samuel Butler: life is one long process of getting tired. Boredom has sapped the vigor of life out of today's society. I am quite convinced of that. How often have you heard folks saying, "I'm bored, I'm bored"? It's not, you see, that there is nothing to do, but rather, there is nothing that brings deep down satisfaction that people are looking for. There is a restlessness, a lack of contentment in society. Did you know that the Bible links contentment with our experience of godliness? Paul, writing to Timothy in 1 Timothy chapter 6 and verse 6, encourages him to pursue godliness. Why? Because the fruit of that, says Paul, is contentment. The man who lives his life in relation to God will not be bored. Why? His life is full of meaning. For he, you see, now has discovered that he has a goal for living. He has discovered the meaning and the purpose of his existence. He sees life here on earth as God's workshop, preparing him for the showroom of glory. Now, people who are bored become obsessed with trivia. Have you noticed that? Oz Guinness analyzes our obsession with trivial pursuits and rites. Human life has traditionally been lived in a house with windows on other worlds. These windows may sometimes have been dirty, broken, or boarded up, but they were always there. Only in the modern world have we achieved what is called a house without windows, shut off from transcendence. Modern man is shut in to triviality. You see what he's saying? When there is no window in our life, and we can't look out beyond ourselves to see God and God's purpose and his destiny for us with all its glory and wonder, no windows, we look in, and all that's there in comparison with that is trivia, and we become obsessed with that. Isn't that a penetrating analysis of contemporary society? We are producing a generation obsessed with the trivial because it has shut God out. I wonder if we, the church, are aware of the tremendous opportunity which this gives us to proclaim the gospel as something which restores meaning and purpose to human life. Or have we in the church also shut God out? Have we become obsessed with the trivial? Have we denied the windows that God has placed in our lives? Parents, when children look at your lives, what do they see? Young folk, what do your friends at school or college see? People with families, what do your relatives see when they look at your lives? Do they see a life bored and restless? Or do they see a poise and contentment, which is the product of the gospel of grace? Now, people are not only aware of going round in circles and being bored with life. The great fear of so many people is that life has no meaning. Shakespeare puts his finger on this fear of meaninglessness when he writes, "All the world's a stage, and all the men and women merely players. They have their exits and their entrances. Life is just a big production. It's a big act. It's a show." And again, life's a tale told by an idiot, full of sound and fury, signifying nothing. The lament of verse 11 in our passage expresses the soul's fear of nothingness. There is no remembrance of men of old, and even those who are yet to come will not be remembered by those who follow. Now the idea expressed here is that your life is worth nothing and for nothing. To think that generations to come will not give heed to your fleeting existence is hard to bear. The human heart is frightened of emptiness, of nothingness. And I can't think of anything which haunts the secular mind like the fear of nothingness. Nietzsche, a famous philosopher in the earlier part of this century, tried to make nothingness a way of life. You see, he couldn't stand the idea of God watching over him and watching and loving him even in his evil. And so he began to teach there is no God, and man was supposed to look out into the universe in all its emptiness and meaninglessness and laugh in its face. That was his philosophy of life. Laugh, and by laughing rise above the meaninglessness. Nietzsche himself got little comfort from this philosophy. His mind snapped under the strain, and for the last years of his life he was insane. Others less honest than Nietzsche realize that the life they live apart from God does not bring fulfillment. They don't want God, nor do they want to conclude that life has no meaning. And so their solution is to try and find meaning elsewhere. They take another jigsaw piece, if you like, as we were saying to the children, and try and fit that into the jigsaw of their lives. If I can change the metaphor, such people take refuge in crumbling towers, and the greater part of the book of Ecclesiastes is taken up with the demolition of such towers. And the writer touches on one briefly at the close of the chapter. This tower, the first tower he demolishes, is the pursuit of earthly wisdom. Some men, you see, hope that human wisdom can provide answers to all life's questions. Now, God has certainly placed in man the deep compulsion and inner urge to discover the truth. The writer describes this in verse 13 as a heavy burden. The whole history of human philosophy charts man's attempts to discover the meaning of life and to prove the existence of God. But wisdom, prized possession of the ancient world, has proved itself inadequate. We read in verse 15 of wisdom's inability to straighten out many of life's problems. In fact, it merely compounds man's vexation with life, because it raises more questions than it begins to answer. By giving man a deeper insight into his life, it only makes him more dissatisfied. That's what the writer's saying. In the Old Testament wisdom literature, Job asks the question, can a man by searching find out God? And he rightly expects the answer no to be given. But more than that, we discover that the collective wisdom of Job's four counselors is inadequate to answer even some of the most basic questions about life. One of the things that book is teaching us is that the sum of man's wisdom can't answer ordinary questions about life, never mind about God. Then in the New Testament, Paul has the efforts of the greatest Greek philosophers in mind when he says in 1 Corinthians chapter 1 and verse 21, since the world in its wisdom did not know God, God was pleased through the foolishness of what is preached to save those who believe. You see, man without God's help can neither discover what God is like nor the meaning of his own existence. His determination to discover and search for truth on his own blinds him to the fact that he must rely on God's disclosing himself to him. The same thing, you know, happens today. Men try to solve all problems and attain all knowledge by a process of rational thinking. Unaided and unenlightened reason is attempting to discover what life is all about. But as one writer puts it, they are left with a hole in the center of their thinking. Listen to such men on TV discussion programs, and you'll soon become aware of the fact that they aren't really saying anything often. Having removed God's revelation of himself from their thinking, they're left with a gaping hole. It is all very unsatisfactory and inconclusive, or to use the preacher's words in verse 17, it's a chasing after the wind. Unenlightened reason will always force men and women to agree with Tennessee Williams. Life is an unanswered question. Ecclesiastes then challenges men to ask if their life is fulfilled. We simply cannot have fullness of life if we live our lives outside of any relationship with God, or with a God who is no more than a hazy, adjustable blur. This book not only refuses to allow us to run away and hide behind unsatisfactory substitutes for God, it begins by exposing human wisdom as thinking with a gaping hole in the middle. To take this path is merely to irritate our quest for meaning to life. You know, I met a man some years ago who assured me that most of his life had been spent with hours each day in the library, poring over all the great works of literature and philosophy that he could find. He had been determined to make this his quest, to discover the meaning of life by drawing upon all the human wisdom down through the centuries that he could get his hands upon. And his conclusion at the end of all of that was that it had failed, and failed miserably to satisfy the yearning in his heart. Human wisdom is like chasing after the wind. Where does recognizing all this lead us? Why does the preacher, under the guidance of God's Spirit, begin to tear down such towers of hope in which men have begun to take refuge in their quest for meaning? He tears them down in order that they might begin to build upon a more dependable and more sure foundation. that they might come to see that only as God has his rightful place in their hearts and daily living, will their craving for meaning and purpose be satisfied. I wonder, have any towers begun to crumble this morning? Has the quest for longing and meaning and the purpose of your existence been awakened afresh in your heart this morning? Why am I here? What is the purpose of my life? Life does not need to be a futile chasing after the wind. It does not need to be an unsatisfactory escapism. It does not need to be the case that we drop ourselves in a sea of despair. Jesus Christ, the eternal Son of God, is the key to life's meaning. He can fill the gaping hole in each human heart. He is the missing piece which makes sense of the jigsaw of our lives, making them complete. It's only as we live our lives in relation to God that we begin to discover the purpose of our existence. You know, this is the message of hope for Bergedi and for Bayliston and for Swinton and for beyond all of that. Jesus Christ gives meaning and purpose to our lives. We begin to see through the spectacles that he provides that God has created us with a destiny, a glorious destiny, and a grand purpose. What a message we've been entrusted with. May God enable us each one to grasp that message more clearly and more truly. Let us bring our service to its conclusion.